Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Art Sear of Carthage College, Democrat Tom Scheer, Republican Chris Voronis, and Craig Kepstein, U.S. Navy Reserve retired. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. To those listening and watching this program in Chicago, let me begin with an important message for you. The Chicago school strike will move into its second week tomorrow. The strike is not over, and there will be no school in Chicago tomorrow. But we now move on to our discussion nationally and internationally about the violence that is racking the entire Middle Eastern part of this world because of riots that broke out. The short version is allegedly it's over a film that has enraged the Islamic world. I want to talk about how real that is and put it in context to the euphoria that we had on this program when we saw what was described as Arab Spring. We were extolling the virtues of the internet about how freedom was growing and an oppressive government in Egypt was being overthrown. And I would say a lot of people that were on this show, both Republicans and Democrats and around the world, were sort of euphoric. We were happy. We thought that maybe things were turning in a positive way. Well, we're a little over a year later now, and the internet is now telling a different story. The people in the streets are not throwing a tyrant over. They're killing Americans, foreign service officers, former Navy SEALs in the alleged secure compound of a U.S. Diplomatic mission. They're burning the American flag in over 20 countries. And so the world has dramatically changed, and it's changing literally as we speak. So let me begin by, first of all, talking about one of the key points, and that is Art Sear. Thank you very much for joining us from Carthage College, scholar on international relations. Where do you personally put the film, the anti-Islamic film, and how much of a spark really was that film, or is it an excuse?
I think it's probably both. I honestly don't know, but I think the media likes to focus on the importance of media events, understandably, and this film is certainly a media event. However, mass demonstrations predate this particular propaganda film. They predate the internet. I think that this popular representation that you rightly emphasize is part of a very long-term historical trend. It's important, not just to academics. And the fact that people want representative government doesn't mean that they're going to pick our kind, our type of Western representative democracy.
Craig Kepstein also joins us, U.S. Navy Reserve. Your answer to the question about the film and sort of the easy, short version of explaining what it's all about to American viewers, which may not be terribly accurate.
I think it's the United States policy rather than the film. The film may have been an excuse to use in talking about why our policy isn't working abroad, but the policy certainly has not worked in the Arab Crescent whatsoever. I don't know. I just see more of Jimmy Carter here. That worries me. I don't want to see Jimmy Obama. I want President Obama to succeed, not to fail in this mission.
Tom Scheer, I want to get your reaction again to the first question. I want everybody to respond to the first question, because, again, very simplistically, the media tends to look for, in many cases, simplistic answers.
Well, the spark and the trigger was the video. The media is not unfair in singling that out, because that's what they're being told by a lot of these crazy people who are demonstrating. There was an interview I saw on CBS where one of the Muslim extremists who was demonstrating said, "We want the United States government to guarantee that no video like this will ever be made again." These people are so ignorant, so uneducated, so wrong that they think the United States government can control the freedom of speech and the creation of a video. So the video was the target. But I agree with Craig. The issue is American policy as it's viewed by extremist Muslim fundamentalists, people who Islamists who disrespect Islam. That, and it's not just the policy now. I would point out this isn't just Jimmy Carter, Barack Obama. George W. Bush was president when 9/11 happened. And what was our policy then? What was so wrong with that policy?
Chris Veronis also joins us, our Republican tonight. Chris, your response?
This video has been out for months. It was just recently translated into Arabic, and that triggered these the mob actions. But that can't be the takeaway, because it's extremely clear. If you look at the facts of the attack on Chris Stevens and the three other members of the diplomatic corps, that was a very premeditated attack, and it's scary to know how much those attackers knew about location, movements, etc. And that flies in the face completely of what the White House is putting out, that it was spontaneous in reaction to the video.
By the way, today the president of Libya's parliament was on CBS's Face the Nation today. They announced that they have rounded up about 50 people who they are interrogating and think that they may be involved in the attacks. But this is what the foreign or the head of the General Assembly had to say. He said that a few of those arrested are foreigners. He blamed them on foreigners, some of them from Mali and Algeria. The others are affiliated with Al-Qaeda or are sympathizers. Now, that was a Libyan official saying that. He went on to say that there is no doubt, that's a direct quote, the fatal attack was planned and not a result of an anti-American demonstration that began that day, which was the 11th anniversary of September 11th, the terrorist attacks on the United States. So here you have, and then he went on to say, definitely was planned by foreigners, by people who entered the country a few months ago. They were planning this criminal act since their arrival, but he then went on to say there is no evidence yet that the attack was planned by Al-Qaeda or any of their subgroups. So you have the Libyan general of leadership of the country saying one thing, and you have Hillary Clinton basically blaming it on the film.
Not just the general, Bruce, the president of Libya.
Well, don't forget that there was information that came out from the State Department. It wasn't on the record. They don't want to tip their hand entirely.
Right.
Fairly early, within hours after the attack, saying that it was not spontaneous, that they just used the demonstration as a cover for this premeditated attack. Hillary Clinton is trying to, I assume, focus on she doesn't want people to think that this country, as policy, agrees with the blanket condemnation of Islam. So she has to say that, and that's the right thing to say. But I don't think anybody has claimed that this was strictly due to the video. That was the trigger for the demonstrations, but not for the murderous act. Those are two different things. The demonstrations are involving tens of thousands of
people. I think what she said is different than what the Libyan general Congress leader said. Art, I want to get your reaction to that. Again, she made her comments 2 days ago. He was on Face the Nation today. But again, 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. I want to get your reaction to the reaction of this horrible incident, and also the way in which the president and the way in which candidate Mitt Romney have responded to it thus far. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, where the Chicago school strike is not over. There will be no school tomorrow. There will be an update on the news coming up shortly if you're listening to us on our flagship station, WLS in Chicago. But no school tomorrow in Chicago. The school strike moving into its second week. We are talking about the bigger, broader issue of violence in the Middle East. And Tom, you were asking or making a comment during the break, so why don't you share that with the audience?
Well, I'm very disturbed and disappointed that an attack like this could be successful on U.S. diplomatic property at a U.S. diplomatic station in this day and age. I'm shocked and disappointed that there weren't Marines as part of the security detail there. We have Marines in Paris at the embassy there. Why were there no Marines there? And if you look at the Obama administration's record, counterterrorism, national security, it's been spectacular. This was a grievous lack of security, in my opinion. And I'd like to know why.
Now, again, Craig, we should mention that, one of the things, you spent 28 years in the United States military. You were involved in the planning and the extradition of U.S. persons at the U.S. Embassy in Mogadishu during Desert Storm. You've briefed people. You've spent a lot of time around U.S. embassies. What is the standard protocol? I mean, what I understand is, again, we have four people dead, including two Navy SEALs. But shouldn't the security force be a lot larger than a couple of SEALs, even though SEALs are obviously super heroic, but there's only two of them?
And they were former Navy SEALs, right?
Yeah.
Former Navy SEALs.
Yeah, they weren't currently active in the military.
Yeah, and I was tasked to a Navy SEAL team, SEAL Team 1 in Korea as well. Uh-huh. So my viewpoint is kind of an overbroad viewpoint. I was not a Navy SEAL, though.
My question to you is, two people, that was the security staff?
Okay, I don't think that was the whole security staff.
No,
I don't know what happened to the rest.
Those were the casualties.
Basically, things were happening quickly in that part of Libya. Libya?
Libya, right.
Yeah, Benghazi. Benghazi is the site of really where the whole, Arab Spring and that part, that country really began. It's where the radical Islamists really, that was their headquarters. And quite frankly, I don't think we were ready for that at all.
Why couldn't
things were changing too dramatically?
Why couldn't people in the streets basically overrun virtually any U.S. embassy?
Well,
it's not an embassy; it's a consulate, which is much smaller.
Okay.
That to me does imply inside planning and inside help. However, gentlemen, I must object to at least righteous second guessing after the event. Whenever a tragedy like this occurs, naturally something went wrong, but something is always going wrong.
Well,
I don't think we should be so condemnatory.
They don't do as much.
That's why it implies an inside job to me, but I don't think we should be sitting around here like a bunch of professors and complaining about U.S. security as the main thing to be discussing tonight.
But again, take us inside, because you made a point. You've made the difference between a consulate and an embassy.
Yes.
So educate us, if you will, Professor. What is the difference insofar as levels of security? What type of work they do? Share your knowledge with us.
There's one embassy, or at most two in the U.S., counting the United Nations delegations. They have very heavy security. Characteristically, the ambassador, when in country, is usually there. Consulates can be very small. And they're also quite numerous. Obviously, this event in Libya should have been handled differently, but as President Kennedy used to like to say, with some very firsthand experience to guide him, after a tragedy occurs, everybody's an expert and all things become clear. But they're much smaller, and the fact that it was clearly known that the ambassador was there, this wasn't a lucky hit, implies inside information, which is perhaps something we should be discussing.
But again, that inside information, again, which is traditional, and it goes back hundreds of years, that when you go into a country, you find people indigenous to that country that you believe are honest and they've gone through some background checks. These are the people that are they're doing administrative work. You hire a lot of local indigenous people to work at the U.S. Embassy or consulate. So you're relying on them.
There hasn't been time to vet all of them. And we haven't been that active in Libya over the course of the last 10 years or so.
For good reasons.
15 years.
It was a terrorist state with which we didn't have relations.
Right. But usually when the ambassador moves with a great group to protect him or her.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I agree with Art that, second-day quarterbacking is a political tradition in this country. But I think one of the most horrific reality checks about what happened, not just in Libya, but in Tunisia, Cairo, was a complete ignorance of one of the hardest lessons we learned in 9/11, which is we can't let our enemies find the crack in the armor, and that's exactly what happened. The effortless ease that this mob penetrated the outer perimeters—that's scary, and frankly, there's no excuse for that to happen in such a easy way in three hot spots in the Middle East.
It's happened before. I mean, we had 200 or so Marines killed at the Beirut airport when Ronald Reagan had them there in 1983, and some suicide bomber was able to drive a truck filled with explosives close enough to bomb the barracks. That's a military setup, not even a consulate or an embassy. I was shocked that could happen. This happens from time to time, but each time I'm as critical.
The embassy in Tehran.
And they knew that there had – that was – Ambassador Sullivan eschewed additional security in 1979 in Iran, right, Bruce? Remember that?
That's correct.
Yep.
See, one of the things that we need to focus on and share with our listeners is the fact that we're dealing with a very non-educated group of people. Many people in the Islamic Crescent countries simply have not had the opportunity to go to school. The population growth there is immense. In fact, by the year 2020, it's estimated that the Islamic population of the world will be about a quarter of the world's population. But imagine in Islam now, 50% of the population, women, simply don't participate in this kind of society. If you saw the demonstrators, how many women did you see? The why is that they're not allowed.
I want to go back to my first question.
Okay.
A year ago when Arab Spring evolved, and it evolved in more than just one country,
right.
But the big spotlight was in Egypt, but it was happening in Tunisia and Iran. We felt that the winds of freedom were blowing out the despots. I would say that most people, Republicans and Democrats in this country, were thinking positively that this was a breath of fresh air, and despots who we had been involved with, they were being thrown out. And we had hoped that those that were in the street had seen the opportunities that laid before them.
But they don't know Islam. That's the key.
But here's the point. I want to see if we can separate Islam from the next question I'm asking. They did not see any quick change in their individual lifestyles, did they?
Not at all.
Did their economies grow?
Right.
If anything, it got worse.
Okay.
And the protests are continuing.
And the protests continue.
Yes.
So this spark of freedom that we viewed very positively just over a year ago, why has it turned anti-American?
Because the Arab Spring was never about an endorsement of Western values, politics, or diplomacy.
Precisely.
Or policy. It never was.
It's Islamic values and Islamic way of life in the Islamic countries, and it was almost anti-Western in its beginnings.
So you can have democracy
The young people who got credit for this, the young people with their iPhones who got a lot of credit, because everybody in the media was saying, oh, this is social media at its best. I mean, look, we're changing the world. I mean, the reality was that really was not true.
The reality was that the uprisings created a huge vacuum. And into a vacuum goes the most powerful group, or groups plural.
Precisely.
And so we have an election, and our guy doesn't win in Egypt.
Correct.
Art, is that a fair assessment?
No, I don't think it's fair, actually. I don't want to be too argumentative with such a distinguished...
The argument. No, that's why we're here.
That's why we're here. You agreed with this.
Your media quote at the beginning was, I think, very telling, because you talked about the piece emphasized how the degree to which governments are cooperating with us. The Arab Brotherhood is in power in Egypt. The Arab Brotherhood has kept in place that treaty which Jimmy Carter negotiated between Israel and Egypt at the end of the 70s. An important test will be the degree to which these elected governments are cooperating with the FBI and the CIA. I would return to the original point.
They're not in Libya yet. The FBI is not in Libya yet.
Well, it'll be an interesting test. Susan Rice, our ambassador to the UN, I think was persuasive on the talk shows this morning. Hillary Clinton and others have been mentioned. She said it's really both popular uprisings exploited by a very powerful group. Al-Qaeda is extremely powerful, as you gentlemen know, in North Africa. Generally, they've been getting stronger since 9/11. They're stronger today than they were several years ago, especially in countries that have essentially failed, like Somalia and Sudan. I don't think we should be surprised that they're making mischief and taking advantage of these popular uprisings. I would quarrel with the proposition that women don't participate. Women are participating more and more in the Third World, including being elected to parliament, and that, with generally rising standards of living, is extremely encouraging. We've got to take a long-term view, which Americans don't like to do. But other people in the world, including some of them Muslims, fellows, other people take a much longer-term view than we do.
One of the worst elements you could introduce into a powder keg like the Middle East is uncertainty. And I think one of the scariest takeaways is I don't think anyone's quite clear about what our policy is with the Arab Spring nations, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, once new governments took over. So I think there's something to be said of a policy that's adrift, and last week's violence being a reality check, blowing the lid off of who's in charge, what's our policy, who are our friends. This was a question that Obama stumped him when, mm-hmm. when he was asked on Telemundo, describe Egypt. And he said, neither our friend nor our ally, right. or enemy or ally. He later backtracked on
it. Well, that was to send a message to the administration there that you need to prove yourself to us.
And he later backtracked.
We're giving you $1 billion a year in aid to keep that treaty with Israel, to behave yourselves. There's a lot of uncertainty because Mubarak may have been a bad guy, but he was our bad guy.
Right.
So Obama was intelligently trying to say Egypt's on trial right now.
Yeah, I'm not
back
sure.
Back shortly, we've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Nice to meet you. From Beverly Hills, California to the Beverly neighborhood in Chicago, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us. If you're listening to us in Chicago, the school strike is not over and the Chicago Public Schools will not be open tomorrow. The strike continues. More on upcoming news. And for those listening around the country, we're talking about national and international relations. Joining us around the table this evening, Art Sear is here. He is the A.W. Clawson Professor at Carthage College. That is in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the Congressional District of Paul Ryan.
Yes, indeed.
Also joining us this evening is Tom Scheer. Tom Scheer is a media consultant, and he is also a card-carrying Democrat. And also joining us this evening, we have Chris Voronis. He is our card-carrying Republican, and he is with ASOP Communications, where he is the president. And also Craig Kopstein joins us, 28 years in the United States Navy, Navy Reserve, and in the course of his career served on the staff of General Norman Schwarzkopf during Desert Storm. He was assigned to SEAL Team 1 in Korea as a non-SEAL intelligence officer and was involved in the extradition of U.S. persons at the U.S. Embassy in Mogadishu, and also did a lot of advising and also has done international world travels and tours. And they are our guests this evening. We're going to go to calls in just a moment. Actually, we're going to go to call now. Let's go to Elizabeth. She's listening to us in the mountains, the beautiful mountains of New Mexico. And she's near Roswell, and she's listening to us on KTSM. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Yes, hi, Bruce. I just wanted to make a comment, well, a couple of comments. First, a few years ago, we had some friends staying with us, and he, I have to tell you, most of our family has served in the military in different branches. I think everything but the Army. Anyway, a few years ago, we had a friend staying with us that was moving to the Dallas-Fort Worth area in a pretty high-security job and moved into a really nice neighborhood, you know, moving there, trying to find a good place for his family. And once he moved into the neighborhood, he discovered that it was almost totally Muslim. And he was told by his neighbor when he met him that if he... I realize this sounds extreme, but this is what happened, that if he ever mentioned, I don't think he told us that he was talking about his faith as a Christian, but I'm sure he was because he's a strong Christian. He said that he mentioned to his neighbor, whatever he said, and he said if you ever mention Jesus to my family, I'll have to kill you. And I just, both of us were just blown away by that because you think about living in America and being able to express your opinion and share your faith, whatever it is. And I just think that we're not aware of what's going on in our own country.
Well, I think, Elizabeth, let me just stop you here for a second. Obviously, it's a national call-in show. You can call in and tell a story. I'm not saying that your story is not accurate.
No,
I'm just saying that is an anecdotal story about something that happened in your life. I think a question that I would have is that, one of the first things that was said after 9/11, something that I think I even said on that very first broadcast, when we did the show from Stockholm just days after 9/11. Art, sir, you were back here in Chicago on that broadcast.
Yeah.
I said at that particular time, because they were trying to go, why us? Why did they do this to us? The question is, they don't like us. It isn't just that they don't like the United States. They don't like us. They don't like the way we live, the way we have pluralism, the way we treat women, the way we treat gays and lesbians. I mean, they don't like anything about us. And when I say they, I mean the extremist element of Islam. And that was the problem on 9/11 of 2001.
That hasn't changed.
It continues to be the problem now.
It's a bigger problem.
Again, you had the reaction the other day about this person who was screaming and yelling, you can't allow movies like this to be made. Well, you know what? He doesn't get the United States. In the United States, we can make movies like that. Now, I've not seen the movie. It may be reprehensible. I've not seen it. But I don't want to live in a country where movies like that can't be made.
Hmm.
And now you have this internet, which gets things around the world instantly, whether you have significant funding or not. And that's not – we don't, most Americans don't want to live in a world like that. And yet you have people, because of a lack of education or their ignorance is being fanned by an interpretation of a religion, and they're going off half-cocked around the world.
Yes, freedom of religion and freedom of speech are two of the key tenets of this country. I mean, for example, we welcome all people of all religions, but come here expecting to be one of many religions, not imagining that you are going to take over the United States.
Go ahead. I want to give everybody a chance to respond to that, and then I want to move on to another
topic.
Something
else happened after 9/11, Bruce. That was, I think, on September 12th, the President of the United States saying that Islam is, at its heart, a peaceful religion, and the issue is not Islam. It's extremists who want to kill us. So I think that there's a really important distinction to be made about a religion and religious zealots who would want to kill us. And if this person in Dallas or wherever said this, you should be reported to the police because that's a threat.
Yeah, in this country we have laws against that.
We're all for freedom of religion. I believe one of President George W. Bush's finest hours was the very moving national religious ceremony right after 9/11 in the National Cathedral with the Imam of North America. In my ignorance, I didn't know there was an Imam of North America till then. It was enormously impressive. I do know something about Islam. I do know that Jesus Christ is accepted as a prophet in the Islamic religion. So this violent person in Dallas, like a lot of violent people, was obviously uninformed, if I understood the caller correctly.
There's two things. Bruce is absolutely right. These people don't like us and the way we live our lives in this country. All right. But the differences between the two societies have existed for decades. The terrorism didn't really start until the early 1980s, 1982 to be precise, after the Christian massacres of the Muslims in the Shabra and Shatila refugee camps in Lebanon, during the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. And Ariel Sharon was responsible for that. The Knesset in Israel later condemned him for his lack of oversight in that case. And I'm a supporter of Israel. I don't want anybody to get their dander up that I'm knocking Israel per se. I'm just saying that was the beginning of the modern terrorist movement. Fast forward 30 years, or this would have been 19 years to 2001. We were in Saudi Arabia. Bin Laden and his extremists were vehemently opposed to that. We continue, rightfully in my mind, my opinion, I think the opinion of those of us at this table, we continue to support Israel strongly. And these extremists are not only against our lifestyle, they're against Israel. They are against our foreign policy. They didn't like us propping up Mubarak, just as we had helped Sadat before him. They didn't like our involvement in Saudi Arabia. So it's not only a cultural clash, it is very much a political clash.
In this case, we began the discussion talking about what incited the crowd. Was it the film? I mean, that's the quick, easy response.
The administration answer is probably no.
The administration, but it was possibly part of it. It's an excuse.
Yeah.
It's an excuse. Okay. It's like the rioting that takes place, has taken place when people win the NBA championships or cities. You know, it's an excuse to loot. The thugs of the world, wherever they live, whether they're inner cities or halfway around the world, the thug culture will find a way to throw rocks and create violence. But here's my question: if indeed that is a portion of what might have ignited the world. Has there been too much chest thumping by this administration, by this president, over and over again at the convention in North Carolina about we killed Osama bin Laden?
Without a doubt.
Over and over and over and over again. Could that equally be something that excites those people? Because Osama bin Laden remains very popular in that part of the world. And here you have the president of the United States, the vice president, and every third speaker reminding that we killed Osama bin Laden. Tom, sure, you're the Democrat.
Yeah,
too much of that?
No, I don't think so, because this is in response to the last 2 years, even since bin Laden was killed, the Republicans saying that Obama's soft on counterterrorism and soft on national security.
No, but here's my point.
Yeah.
He is responding in a political way, because the world knows that he got Osama. The Republicans know it, but what I'm saying is, in a political convention, to focus on to make a political point.
That wasn't the only focus.
Not realizing that political point was being heard around the world, and the people, many of the people who are out rioting and killing in the streets of Middle East right now, they don't like the idea that Osama bin Laden was killed. They don't like the person that killed them.
It is correct and proper for presidents to list their accomplishments, just as the opposition party is going to list what the opposition believes are their detractions.
But it's not correct and proper, though, to wait 17 hours to go to Las Vegas to address convention people and to give an interview to the pimp with a limp and not see Netanyahu when Netanyahu is coming to the United States, to the UN, and the president of the United States, knowing what a tinderbox the Middle East is,
Barack Obama,
cannot see him.
Barack Obama
has met
more with Netanyahu than with any foreign leader in the world.
I don't know if you're aware of that.
A
number of times. I know Art Sear wants to challenge.
That's what you said before.
I think you want to challenge my point, Chris. I don't know where you're coming down, but I want to get reaction to that. Was that a mistake, and is any part of that creating problems for us in the Middle East? Back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for being with us tonight. Again, a reminder, there is no school in Chicago tomorrow. The strike has not been settled. More news coming up at the top of the hour. Art Sear, I was going to get your response because I saw you grimacing when I was...
Oh, I'm always grimacing, Bruce. I'm an older guy.
Well, I was making the point as to whether or not there's been too much bravado on the part of the president about that he killed Osama bin Laden. And could that rile up a lot of people in the Middle East, some of the people that are out there rioting and hate America, because they don't like the president and they don't like the country that killed someone who they like?
I think the president uses the first-person pronoun entirely too much, first-person singular, talking about my administration and me and I. My impression is he's very careful to use the plural when talking about taking out bin Laden. It's been reported in serious media and not been denied by the Republicans that he invited former President Bush to join him at the announcement that bin Laden had been killed and that the Bush and his staff declined that opportunity. I do think in a campaign situation...
Is that a good idea?
No, but I'm just a professor, Bruce.
Okay,
I don't know.
I think that was a mistake.
You're
a guest on a national radio show.
Much more
famous.
Well, since I've been on your program, Bruce, my whole life has been transformed. I'd like to get it back again. The Democrats are very vulnerable on defense and have been for at least two decades. In 2008, McCain, a man I admire personally, had he been able to be more coherent and orderly, could have exploited that particularly as a heroic war prisoner. Even in 2008, when the Democrats were hit on everything, the economy and welfare and all the touchy-feely issues, and especially health care and education, the Republicans stayed ahead on defense. That's why Robert Gates was reappointed. Final point, Ronald Reagan, obviously a successful politician, whether you care for him or not, during the Desert One fiasco, the disaster that took various American lives when the rescue operation failed in Iran, when he was asked to comment, he said, "I'm not going to comment. This is a foreign policy matter, and we should do our best to support our president and our country." I think Romney and the Republicans, I realize there's high-priced help.
they seem nuts to me to be exploiting so obviously these unfortunate foreign policy developments.
I want to acknowledge one of Tom's points. The political isn't all of us. Have to acknowledge that the killing of bin Laden was probably old Barack Obama's single biggest accomplishment in his presidency. I'll give him that. And they can beat their chests, however gratuitous it was. But I wouldn't say bravado is the problem with the president in the White House right now. It's a far worse indictment. I hate to say it. It's brainlessness. That instead of doing a security briefing the following morning, trying to assess what was happening in three nations that were flipped within the last year and a half, their governments, instead he does a show with David Letterman. He does this hip-hop show, Pimp with a Limp, does a fundraiser in Las Vegas, and he thanks his volunteers and supporters and compares them to military servicemen, tells them how proud he is. People should be mortified when the president of the United States, after a tragedy, which calls into question what's our policy, how are we protecting our consulates, our embassies overseas, throws that completely into question. People should be mortified at that.
Well, you have to understand that no reasonable person is going to do everything right all the time. I'm a Democrat. I support the president. I look forward to his reelection. I agree that those were not the moves to make. It was improper. Sometimes I wonder who advises people. The campaign is important. Getting reelected is important. But I would cancel all non-public affairs television appearances for my president if I were advising him. So I certainly don't disagree. But I also would tell Mitt Romney, don't get out at a press conference and say something completely false. Don't lie. Don't say that this statement was made when he completely twisted the statement. And don't say that it was made in response to the deaths when, in fact, the statement from that embassy in Cairo came out 6 hours before the deaths in Libya. So everybody makes mistakes as a candidate. Obama made mistakes. I agree with you. So did Romney. Neither one is right.
I'm going to come back to what I'm hearing is, Craig, I don't know whether you weighed in on it or not, because you kind of talked around it. And that was the question that I asked, and that is, does no one put any credence in the fact that the president's words and what the messages that came out of the Democratic convention. And by the way, I know that it's important politically for the Democrats to remind people that this year, more than other years, on issues of national defense, they're much stronger than they've had a perception problem this year. Now they've got Osama bin Laden. That is something to talk about. But what I'm wondering is, putting it in context,
you're asking, was it overdone?
People,
yeah.
Was
did
it
that
overdone?
Incite
because
them?
What we've said, here's what we know. We know that a, albeit innocuous, at least we would view it as an innocuous cartoon in a Danish newspaper, enraged the Arab world, allegedly. We know that. We now know that there is a film that allegedly is part of enraging the Arab world. And all I'm saying, if those things are taken as gospel at the moment in the world of world media and world political analysis, I would just say, do we not put the constant bravado of the Democratic Convention that we killed Osama bin Laden? Because Osama bin Laden is someone that is loved by many of the people who are killing America. The people who killed the Americans in the embassy, I'm sure, were admirers of Osama bin Laden. Well, whether they were al-Qaeda or not, the millions of people that are in the streets of the Middle East right now, they love Osama bin Laden.
It doesn't take much to incite crazy people. So what are we supposed to do? Stop with the cartoons? Stop with the movies? Tell the president not to say what his accomplishments were? And it wasn't just bin Laden. He killed and the military, killed, and the CIA killed, I don't know, 12, 15, 18 al-Qaeda head honchos. So it wasn't just one guy.
I know that.
So
I know that.
Are you not supposed to say this? Because we want to pussyfoot around?
I think you're supposed to do it. The world knows who's calling the shots. I'm just saying is, do we put that in context with why those people are riled up at the moment? 1-800-723-8029. Lots of callers. They're coming in. They don't like that comment. Back shortly from Chicago. We're going to be back on television next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Art Sear of Carthage College, Democrat media consultant Tom Scheer, Republican consultant Chris Voronis, and Craig Kapstein from the U.S. Navy Reserve, retired. Our phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. We are talking about the disturbances and the riots and the unrest in the Middle East and how the United States can respond to it. And actually, last hour we spent most of the time talking about the incidents leading up to it. But I do want to ask one question and get everybody's thought as we look forward. And also to spend a moment to talk about the reaction that Mitt Romney offered. It has been pretty much ridiculed by much of the national news media, Romney's quick reaction to the incidents, the perceived politicization of the comments. And as our card-carrying Republican, as also someone involved in media relations, Chris Voronis, what grade would you give Mitt Romney's response to the situation?
Well, I think there's a distinction between the delivery and the content. Delivery is probably the C. But I think there's a point to be made about the content. I mean, we're talking about a White House that distanced itself from the comments put out by the embassy. If the White House is walking away from its own embassy about what it's saying, isn't that fair game for public discourse? Shouldn't someone say, why are we dwelling on having religious zealots' feelings hurt by this video? So I think that's fair game. But again, aside from the inartfulness, how it was delivered and the timing, and I think later on the change in tone of the Romney campaign, the content of what happened there is fair game in my mind.
Well, wait a second. We are falsely, shamelessly, unfairly accused by these Islamist wackos around the world of being anti-Islam. So now this embassy staff, in a statement not vetted by the White House, there was a communications breakdown somewhere, just as when David Stockman criticized Reaganomics and then Reagan said, don't say that. These things happen. There's a disconnect. We are falsely accused of being anti-Islam. So the embassy staff in Cairo, in an Islamic nation, takes the opportunity. Nobody with the right mind in this country would agree with that video, really. I don't think that we would say this religion's good, this religion's bad. So they take an opportunity to say, look, we're not bad people, the Americans. We condemn this stupid amateur video, okay? Why is that such a bad statement to make? Why does that mean we're coddling and trying to mollify Islamist extremists?
How do you know that doesn't represent the official policy of the United States?
Okay, let's say that it does represent the – I think the president had nothing to do with that statement, but I think it does represent the president's views and the policy of this country.
Why did
that
you,
we do not condemn Islam as a peaceful
Why did
religion?
You say the president had nothing to do with that when you don't know if he did or didn't?
So that means that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and the embassy staff are lying when they say Obama didn't know that they were putting out that statement. Obama knows it about every statement being made by every diplomatic mission in the world.
Can we just talk and not get loud in our speech?
Okay. I'm sorry I'm loud. Okay, great. All right. Fine. I'll move down to your volume and I'll ask you this. Do you think the President of the United States, and I'm asking you to answer this rationally, do you think that he knows of every statement made by every diplomatic mission around the world?
Certainly not, but I would imagine that...
So how did he know about this one?
I would imagine that statements that are made out of embassies are made by the public affairs officer under the aegis of the ambassador. Public affairs people don't just come out and come up with a fairy tale
Art
in their mind.
I'm going to ask Art Sear. Art Sear, in the last hour, you made a comment, kind of a aside about Mitt Romney sort of speaking out of turn and not thinking about what he had to say.
I didn't say it doesn't think about it. It's a high-powered presidential campaign. I'm sure a lot of thought goes into candidate statements in both parties.
So do you not disagree with the assessment that he spoke improperly?
I was trying to make a different point, I think, which is there's a lot to be said for not saying anything at all.
If the administration is as inept and mistaken as some of the panelists say, then that's why I mentioned Reagan's response after the Desert One fiasco. It's better to say I stand behind our president and country at the moment.
Do you at this moment in time, what grade, because you're a professor, what grade would you give the public presentation of U.S. policy and outrage following the attacks in the Middle East? The messages from Hillary Clinton. Yeah, administration messages. What grade would you give them? Are they clear? Are they consistent?
Well, it seems condescending to me to do that, but to accommodate the host, I'd give them a B or a B+. It could have been more well coordinated, but I think that the Secretary of State rightly emphasized, as have others, that this film is not U.S. government policy, since the case is being made overseas that it is. I also, one reason I don't give them an A. Small numbers of people are involved. I'm a little concerned that well-informed and well-meaning as we all are, you referred to millions of people demonstrating. That, to me, is an exaggeration. The Islamic world is very large. Actually, quite small proportions of people are involved in every country in these demonstrations.
Could I ask a question before this
goes? I'm speaking in a low, modulated voice, of course, appropriate to radio and the sentiment expressed earlier.
Could I just ask a question before this goes by the board? I'd like to ask the Republicans and the moderates and at this table, does anyone have a problem with the fact that Mitt Romney said that statement, which we're discussing, was issued in response to the killings, when in fact the statement was issued 6 hours before the killings occurred? Does anyone have a problem with that?
How do we know that, you know, the schedule happened the way you just
Because there are broadcasts and there are things on the record.
The bigger question now is not what was said and who said it. The bigger question now is the American people have got to decide, okay? They have seen and witnessed the conduct of foreign policy by Barack Obama for 3.5 years now. What would be different under President Romney? He certainly implied that this would not have happened on his watch. So what would be different? Let's wave the magic wand for you and let's make Mitt Romney the president. What would be different right now in your view, Craig?
Okay, I think what you'd see that is different is a guy who would step up to the plate and say, what's important is important. I will deal with important issues.
What's important? Give us something important. Don't just give us the word. What's
an
important?
An issue like what happened in Egypt. An
what would
issue
he do?
Like what happened in Libya.
What would he do?
I think what he would have said is he would have taken us to a position of strength. The one thing that Islamics simply appreciate is positions of strength, especially by their own leaders.
Would he put more security at every U.S. mission around the world?
There's a limit to how much of that you can do.
Should you say that?
What you do is you remove some of your embassies from some of the countries.
Should you do that?
And maybe
Maybe
you say to the presidents of some of those countries, here's the way that we're going to deal with this. You are getting X dollars in foreign aid from us. We are buying X products from you. These things are going to be decreased.
Don't you think those conversations have taken place with President Obama?
I question whether or not they have. For two reasons. One is, I don't see it happening. But number two, there's been so many changes in political leadership in the Middle East especially. Who knows who's on
first? Shortly, 1-800-723-8029. All calls when we come back. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. We've got lots of callers on the line. They have been very patient. Let's go to Peggy, listening to us on our flagship station, WLS in Chicago. Go ahead.
I need some help.
Can you speak up, please?
I need some help from you and your staff.
Okay, what do you need?
Well, for the first time, I'm ashamed of President Obama. I'm ashamed of my president. I think he dishonored the office.
Why?
If it were something he did, you know, I mean, that would be guilt, and he could correct that. But this is deeper. I mean, shame is just...
Peggy, what did he do that's turned you so depressed here?
Well, I think the thing with the embassy and the guys getting killed there, that put the frosting on the cake. And I was listening to Democratic...
Well, you're blaming that on President Obama?
Yes.
Why?
Yes, and the State Department, too.
Why?
because they didn't, they obviously didn't staff it properly. They didn't talk. Usually the host country protects their embassies like they protect their own territory, and they didn't even, they didn't help them. They didn't.
Well, we don't know the extent that they attempted
we don't,
to do that.
But I'm telling you, I just have never experienced this before.
Well, Peggy, you know what? Thanks for calling, but go back, and I'm sure there are a few other moments in American history that you might have been ashamed of presidents, but I don't know whether we can use the word ashamed of President Obama because of what happened. You might have been disappointed, but again, I don't know why you would be ashamed of a president because of what happened there. Let's move on to, let's say, maybe we've got a better caller in Cookeville, Tennessee. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Bruce. How are you, buddy?
I'm fine. And yourself, Jerry?
Oh, I'm doing just really good this evening. Gosh, there's been so much you guys have been talking about. First off, when they say that they recognize Jesus as a prophet, that's not true. Hmm. If you hear what they say, that Muhammad is the only prophet of Allah. Hmm. So you know, that's just one deal. So when I hear people say that, oh, they recognize Jesus as a prophet, that means they really don't know. They really don't know what they're talking about.
Well, we have some guests here that disagree with you. Art, you were the one that made the comment.
No,
so
I believe I'm correct, but I'll do a little research.
Islam recognizes Jesus as a failed prophet.
Okay.
Yes, but we have to realize that they don't recognize him as the Son of the Living God, as Christians do.
Okay, right.
So they don't, so that offends me.
Okay.
But I'm not going to go out and start burning places up and killing people.
Fair point.
Okay. Point made. Let's go to Lake Forest, Illinois. Michael is listening to us on AM 89 WLS, the radio home of Don, Wade, and Roma.
Thanks for taking the call. In fairness to, let's say, the Obama administration, I think the independent newspaper, British paper, said that Stevens, the ambassador, made trips to several countries in Europe, including Sweden. Then apparently comes to Libya and electively, unless it's proven that he was under pressure to make a trip to the consulate in Benghazi, electively goes there with very lean security, gets flushed out of the embassy, has to go to a safe house, so identifies the location of all the paperwork, including oil contracts and so forth. I think tragically, this career diplomat who had a brilliant career made a very serious error in the timing of his trip to this consulate, and basically now has subjected the secure documents to scrutiny by very intelligent people. They may be tribal, but they're intelligent, including oil contracts. And you have to presume maybe that those oil contracts worth billions of dollars don't really give the people in Libya their fair share. So this is now out on the loose, and the Obama, Hillary Clinton, so forth have to contend with a career diplomat who, let's say, on the face of it, has used very poor judgment, and of course, unfortunately, ends up getting killed.
And your source on this, Michael, can you reference it again?
About the trip and so forth, it was the British paper, The Independent.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Art Sears got a comment for you.
Chris Stevens was not only a respected diplomat, he's been lauded posthumously for his commitment to our values and our kind of representative government in the Arab world, and I'm sure he put himself at risk more than some senior diplomats. I do believe that the consulate was pretty thoroughly burned and destroyed, so if you're concerned about oil company contracts, I'd suggest that perhaps that shouldn't be our highest priorities as Americans or even if we own oil stocks. I'm not sure the comment really gets at what strikes me as the most important issues involved.
What is stored at an American consulate or at an American embassy? Does anyone at this table know?
Yeah,
what
lots,
is stored
of, lots
there?
Of trade and commercial information.
Okay.
I think the caller's
so
right.
So it is possible it could be what this caller is talking
represent,
about.
Consulates
represent the needs of the local population.
Yes,
there,
in terms of visas, in terms of individual travel, but also commercial interests, commercial sections.
Certain embassies are also headquarters for CIA operatives.
Okay, we're talking about
consulates,
not embassies.
Well, I'm very shocked to hear that. That's a shocking statement.
Really? Are you?
I'm shocked in the Casablanca sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, of course.
I'm shocked that gambling is right. Exactly.
Every country has organizations like the CIA, so let's not say that's bad or good or anything else.
I didn't say it's bad at all.
Oh, okay. It's good. I think it's good.
I think the CIA should operate in whatever
tell
way
us more,
sees
tell us more about what is at a council, because this caller brought up an interesting point, is there may have been valuable paperwork at that consulate that may have been evidence to be used by those opposed to the United States to look into some contracts to find out who the people are in that country who are the big beneficiaries of U.S. business and or aid.
I did read that happened. For sure. But typically,
I don't know whether it does, but I'm very interested in knowing what happens and what is happening.
I don't know
embassies.
What happened in that particular instance, but in a typical consulate, you have material like people come there to get passports to get permission to come to the United States.
Visas,
stamps, and things on that order.
I want to move on. I want to back to Chris.
It's classified stuff all over the place.
Right. You gave your answer, and I want Chris,
it's been reported that the looters took sensitive documents of Libyans who have cooperated with the Americans. So there's a big problem right there.
Right.
It's some of the information that's stored at this consulate. But I want to go back to, you talked about one of the most important issues that's being overlooked. You had a U.S. ambassador whose body was drugged through the streets by a mob. By a mob, and pictures taken of him, multiple pictures on camera phones. If there's one obnoxious, glaring takeaway from this tragedy, it's how ill-prepared we were. That three properties, overseas properties, sovereign property of the United States, could be overrun and destroyed. And I just don't think that's getting enough airtime right now.
Well, we've sure as hell talked about it a lot. These things, it's not an unprecedented event. It is tragic. We're second-guessing after the fact something that happened in a very isolated and very dangerous part of the world.
But again, your point is, we are talking about it, your point is the video has not been repeated over and over again. Is that your point?
That the video hasn't been repeated?
The pictures of the ambassador being dragged through the streets. That is not a video. That is not an impression that you feel at this moment has been given.
In part, but I also think that it's not Monday morning quarterbacking to say how ill prepared that we were. It's pretty grievous.
Well,
no, but
18,
wait, but, 18, no, but I want to go back to. But,
excuse
but,
me,
but
18, 18 to, Army Rangers were killed in Somalia. American servicemen's bodies were dragged through the streets and photographed. You going to criticize them after the fact as well?
No, but that was a military operation that went wrong. There's a big difference between American property being overrun by a mob.
Here's my point. My point is, from a media perspective, the searing image of the 1979 takeover of the embassy in Tehran was the Americans being taken out of that embassy, the 59 hostages taken out, blindfolded, at gunpoint. That was played on American television night in, night out. It was the foundation of the Nightline broadcast, okay? That searing image over and over and over again, I believe, led to the defeat of Jimmy Carter, who was perceived as a very weak president in foreign policy. Let me finish. And also, there was evidence in that particular case that that Washington had disregarded requests for additional security. That was part of that story. My question now is, we now live in a more media-centric world than in 1979. The point I'm hearing you say is those pictures do mean 1,000 words. You're saying is that picture over and over again, which could incite American voters, that picture has not been shown enough for you. We don't have the Reginald Denny treatment of this story. The American Marines,
the Rangers in Mogadishu, that shook the Clinton administration
to its
core. And that was the first big douse of cold water the Clinton administration got with the Rangers that were killed and drugged through the streets. You had the same thing here with an ambassador who was a phenomenal ambassador, and I haven't heard of any kind of image that's been reported.
I think we have a press that's protecting President Obama.
I think that's ludicrous. I've been listening to
ludicrous.
This. That's ridiculous.
If you switch the channels on your TV.
I watch it all. That's what I get paid
okay,
to
I do,
that's
too.
Ridiculous.
But if you go and you hear the same things over and over and over again and you do
They're
not see...
They're not protecting this president any more than they protected
Excuse
George
me.
W. Bush with the Iraq War. Everybody was behind that 100%. They didn't want to undermine U.S. security.
But you
so
no, but one thing the American media does do, and the American media on the anniversary of 9/11, whether it was this year or last year, nobody, no national television network wants to play for any extended period of time the planes going into the World Trade Center. They don't want to do it. Back shortly from Chicago.
It's the younger people.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289. Art Sear is here. He is the A.W. Clawson Professor at Carthage College. That's in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Tom Scheer is a media consultant. He is our Democrat. Our Republican tonight is the president of ASOP Communications. And Craig Capstein joins us. He is U.S. Navy Reserve retired. And we got lots of callers on the line. Let's go to Bourbonnais, Illinois, where Terry is listening to us on our flagship station, 89WLS. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, I'm pretty upset about what's going on here with this these attacks we've been having there in the Middle East. And in particular, I can't believe that they're in Benghazi. They weren't forewarned or, you know, come on, it was 9/11. You know, it was the anniversary. They shouldn't have been on a higher alert.
Well, I don't know yet, and I don't think the world knows yet, what level of security they were at. I think that's part of the evidence that has to be discovered as this, you know, there's going to be congressional investigations into this. I think a bigger question from a media perspective, because I don't think now in this 24-hour news cycle that we live in, I don't think you can separate, you know, media coverage from the way that people respond. I mean, the fact that the Wall Street Journal and the Associated Press, they got the filmmaker wrong. They were suggesting that the filmmaker was an American Jewish contractor and that the money had been raised by American Jews to create this film. That was true. And that news was going out around the world.
I don't think the film had anything to do with
this. Say again?
I don't think the film had anything to do with this.
This
was not the administration.
I would not, Terry. Let me just. I'll come back to you.
The film did have something to do with it because the Islamist extremists were interviewed on television saying, "We want this film destroyed and no more of these films."
Yeah, it was
something to do with it.
It wasn't the whole aspect of it element, but it was a element. But my point is, in the initial stories, you have two of the most reputable news entities in the world giving wrong information, suggesting that this was some kind of a American Jewish plot that was involved in making Islam look bad. That's a huge mistake. That's not a little mistake. That's a huge mistake. Media got it wrong because media tends to be, they're so obsessed with being first when being accurate is much more important. But we live in a 24-hour, something is said and it, you know, 30 seconds later, it's tweeted and it's Facebook and it's sent around the world in seconds.
Richard Jewell won $1 million from NBC News because they falsely reported him as the prime suspect in the Olympics bombing.
Right. Mm-hmm. So mistakes are made. But go ahead. Last word to you, Terry, then we're going to move on.
Well, the facts are the facts. They should have been on their toes. They were not. I'm calling from a perspective of I'm 61 years old. I'm a Vietnam veteran. When I was in Vietnam, every time Tet came around, high alert. Keep your eyes open. Watch what's going on. And where does the buck stop is what I'd like to know.
The buck is going to stop, on Election Day, when between now and Election Day, hopefully when more facts come out every single day on what was done and what was not done, people have got to ask themselves, how do we keep this from happening again? And would Mitt Romney be doing anything differently to make that? And I want to come back, before you go, I want to come back to Chris Voronis because we heard from one of our Republicans. I want to hear from our other Republican tonight. Chris, in your view, what would a President Romney have done to prevent what happened?
Look, I don't know is the short answer. I don't know what Mitt Romney would or would not have done. But I think what we do know is on the anniversary, 11th anniversary of 9/11, where it's fair to say that all American interests overseas would be on high alert, to see one consulate or embassy, one after the other, being overrun by mobs and premeditated organizers who knew the movements of U.S. personnel, I think that's shocking. And I think someone needs to step up and explain who's responsible for this.
And by the way, just to repeat for those that did not hear the first broadcast, the first part of the hour this evening, on Face the Nation today, the head of the Libya's General National Congress said that 50 people have been rounded up. They're being interrogated to whether or not involvement. What did I say?
Important point.
And he said that a few of those arrested are foreigners, some of them from Mali and Algeria. The others are affiliated with Al-Qaeda or their sympathizers. He then went on to say, quote, "There is no doubt," end of quote, "the fatal attack was planned and not a result of the anti-American demonstrations that began that day, the 11th anniversary of September 11th, terrorist attack on the United States. Definitely was planned by foreigners, by people who entered the country of Libya a few months ago, and they were planning this criminal act since then and since their arrival." Now, that is counter to what Hillary Clinton said earlier about 4 days ago.
Terry should be thanked with sincere emphasis, not the pro forma way, for his Vietnam service and for his insight in mentioning Tet. Everyone was on their toes every year concerning the Tet offensive. However, concerning a Tet offensive, in early 68, at a time when the Johnson White House and General Westmoreland were obsessed with the Marines surrounded at Khe Sanh and the fact that Khe Sanh might be overrun in the far north, not far from Dien Bien Phu, where the French went down, the Viet Cong launched a Tet offensive using sewers in Saigon and unconventional approaches of all sorts. 40,000 villages and towns were hit. The American embassy was penetrated by suicide squads in Saigon. We had over 500,000 forces, plus civilian contractors and others in South Vietnam at the time. Ambassador Ellsworth Bunker was rolled up in a specially designed lead carpet because he came that close to being assassinated. Everyone was on their toes, but this revolutionary movement still carried out this fantastic attack. It's why I alluded to President Kennedy in that era at the beginning. No matter how well prepared you are, there's always the danger of surprise. And rather than second-guessing, I wish we'd spent more time tonight talking about how one anticipates these kinds of things in the future.
And how do we do it? We'll let you start that discussion right now.
I think we read the work of Roberta Wohlstetter, who in 1962 did a classic study of Pearl Harbor, warning and decision. For years, we had debate that was far more intense than anything we've experienced here tonight. Was President Roosevelt a traitor? How could we possibly lose the Pacific Fleet? She made the point in the book that you're constantly surrounded by noise. Effective intelligence is looking for the signals within that noise. And I think we're best served by assessing what did we miss in connection with these devastating attacks this time.
What do you think we missed? Speculate.
I don't know.
What do you think we missed?
I think we have been misled, especially by our invasion and attack of Iraq, which I believe was quite misguided, by the steady accretion of Al-Qaeda power in North Africa and the Middle East, but North Africa especially.
But you don't really get places, do you, by leading from behind? And nobody here at the table has mentioned Iran during the course of the conversation. They are the prime supporter of terrorism throughout the world. And if somebody was to tell me that they were not complicit in some way, I mean, think about it. Just think about all the different things that happened throughout this Islamic world.
Well, I'm not going to try to guess.
All at the same time.
Iran is opposed to Al-Qaeda. Iran is hostile to Al-Qaeda.
They are and they aren't.
I'm not going to try to guess to guess who funded and helped plan this attack. That'll come out soon enough. I'm not going to guess and speculate with literally no evidence at this table tonight. I will say this, though. This business of leading from behind and makes us vulnerable to these attacks. Bruce asked a very important question earlier. What effect is this going to have on Election Day?
Yes.
Okay, if Mitt Romney gets elected, would that have changed? Say he were already the president, would that have changed this? And I don't think this is going to have any effect on Election Day, because I think the American electorate is intelligent enough to know that you have to look at something called a track record. After 9/11, George W. Bush put changes in effect. He unleashed the CIA. He let the National Security Agency do what it felt it had to do. And the result of George W. Bush's aggressive war on terror, separate from the Iraq War, which I disagree with, was no attacks on U.S. soil, no terrorist attacks, the beginning of a good campaign against al-Qaeda. He didn't get bin Laden. That's a separate issue. All right? We've had seven years of Bush doing that. We've had 4 years of Barack Obama. What has he done? Well, al-Qaeda is gutted. Their leaders are dead, not just bin Laden. We've had no domestic attacks. We've had no terrorist attacks on our property in this country. We have had this thing which happened this week, which was terrible and tragic. That's true. But my point is, our national security and our counterterrorism is just as strong as and effective now as it was in
the
previous
7 years. Where do you put Fort Hood? I agree with everything you said, but where do you put Fort Hood?
Well, that
the attack
wasn't,
on Fort
that
Hood.
Wasn't, that, you're always going to have a renegade kook. Some guy tried to blow up a bomb, wanted a plot to blow up a bar in Chicago over the weekend, and they caught him. Where do you put Fort Hood?
But the kook in Fort Hood had a direct link to radical Islam.
They didn't catch the 9/11 terrorists, even though the FBI knew they were in this country and knew they were taking flight lessons, we didn't catch the guy at Fort Hood beforehand. There are always breakdowns in a bureaucracy.
And Tom, I'm not going to disagree with you with Obama's policies, largely a continuation of George Bush's policies.
Stepping them up, more drone attacks, all sorts.
Absolutely. And those are the two pieces of advice that Bush gave him before he left office, the Stuxnet virus and the drones, which Obama complied to. But I want to go back to what you said, Art. I mean, you're right. The Tet Offensive caught us way off guard. Do you think the Obama administration should carry any responsibility at all to just knowing, have we learned from history at all?
We're going to hear that answer in a moment. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Let's go to Bob in Meridian, Idaho, listening to us on KBOI. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi.
Speak up.
I heard you guys say that the ambassador was dragged through the streets. And I'm a news watcher. I haven't seen anything about that.
Let me stop you right there, because I'm glad you brought that up. First of all, the report that I saw was that, and there was a doctor quoted, that he was put in a car and driven to a hospital that the United States staff didn't even know where he was for hours. He expired at the hospital, and there was a statement by the doctor, etc. The first I've heard that he was dragged through the streets is when Chris mentioned it. I haven't seen any of that. I asked Chris, we talked about this during the break, if that image exists. It was implied here on the show that the image is being suppressed to protect the image of Obama and the United States, to which I would say, if the American media is hiding that image, if he was dragged through the streets, why haven't the Arab TV stations that always put these terrible images up there to make us look bad, why haven't they put the image up? Because the image, there's no proof yet that image exists.
Chris made the charge. Let him elaborate.
I don't know. I don't know if there's a conspiracy, Tom, to suppress these photos. Well,
that's what you implied.
I didn't imply that.
Okay. I must have misinterpreted that. Tell us
about what you know about this photo.
I don't know if this footage exists. It was reported that he was dragged to the streets.
Reported by whom?
It was reported that several
reported
cell phone pictures were taken of him. Dead.
But who reported it?
And what I'm saying is, if
I heard it on Fox News,
and I read it in National Review, but if these photos exist, they will get out.
Okay,
they will.
Bob, make your point.
Did I say something?
Yes.
No. Well, if there was even a hint of anything like that under the Bush administration, we saw the Abu Ghraib pictures. We saw all. We heard all sorts of rumors from Guantanamo. If there was any scintilla of evidence of anything like that under a Republican, the national media would be on it like pigs on slop.
Absolutely, Bob. But, here, but yeah, here's the point, Bob. I know where you're going.
We'll never hear David Gregory.
Bob, you made your point. Now let me just elaborate on what you just heard on this program. Chris Varonis, our Republican, said that he read it in the National Review.
Well, and I'll get more specific with you.
More specific. You be more specific.
I'll quote. The photographs at the Arab TV network El Mayadeen show Chris Stevens' body being dragged through the streets while the locals take souvenir photographs on their cell phones. A man in a red striped shirt photographs the dead-eyed ambassador from above. Another immediately behind his head moves the splayed arms and holds his cell phone camera an inch from the ambassador's nose.
This is very clear. This is really important. What is the source that you just read from?
El Mayadeen.
The story was written by National Review. National Review. Okay, now, Republican has identified the National Review as the source of this story. Our other Republican, Craig Capstein, has been with us tonight. He has said he heard this on Fox. Now, here's my point, Bob, to you and to everyone else. If indeed those photos do exist, and they have not been seen by many people or anyone in the United States as yet, that is a significant piece of evidence that I think the American people would want to see and has a right to see. But in this particular case, if those photos are not being shared, we have a conservative print publication, National Review, and a conservative television network, Fox News, that may be hiding these pictures from the American people. It's not a left of center publication or media. In this particular case, if this is true, and I have no reason to doubt that at all. So in this particular case, and normally I'm very critical of the national news media.
Well, I think
in this
the House
particular case, does everyone at this table believe that those pictures, if they exist, should they be made public?
Yes, they should. Does everyone agree with that? I've been in broadcasting for 29 years. If they exist, they'll be shown. They might blot out some tasteless images and some of the blood and gore. They will be on the air and in newspapers.
We have a news outlet identified here.
Yeah, but I think the House and Senate.
If that Arab news outlet makes it available to the United States or however it's done, however these images get out, they'll be shown.
Picking up from Al Jazeera. I think the House and Senate Intelligence Committees will begin taking up the issue probably on Monday, tomorrow.
Well, they should because this is if this image exists, if it exists, it could be very injurious, I think, to the president's reelection. Because I think it will enrage, it will incite the electorate. Just like pictures in 1979 led to the ultimate demise of Jimmy Carter, there's a sense of weakness, the sense that we can't respond, and that an American citizen has been degraded in the public eye if indeed these pictures exist. So again, you can argue that maybe they're being suppressed because the national news media really loves Barack Obama. But in this particular case, the source of those pictures are right of center publications. So the question I would ask is, if they really do exist, I frankly cannot believe they won't come out. But it seems to me that what we've discussed here this evening is a very significant piece of information. And we will wait. We'll be next week at this time. If those pictures are out, I think they'll be dominating the debate. If it turned out that they're fabricated or they don't exist, then I think we'll remember that as well. 1-800-723-8289. Write that number down because we want you to give it a call next week when we return at this same time. Our thanks this evening to Craig Capstein and to the ever popular Chris Varonis, and Tom Scher and Art Sear for their being with us this evening. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WS. Tom Veracruz make the program possible. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.